From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
Welcome to Issues in the News. I'm Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard. Joining me on the show this week are Barbara Slavin, Acting Director of the Future of Iran Initiative at the Atlantic Council and Washington correspondent for Al Monitor, and Tom DeFrank, Contributing Editor at National Journal. And here are the issues. 49 people were killed in a terrorist attack at a gay bar in Orlando by a Florida man who had pledged allegiance to Islamic State, the terrorist group. The massacre prompted an effort by Democrats to enact gun control legislation. And President Obama responded to critics who have faulted him for refusing to use the phrase, quote, radical Islam, unquote. And in the United Kingdom, voters will decide next week if the UK is to remain in the European Union or leave. The Leave camp has gained in recent polls. Tom, let me start with you. Where do we go from here? What happens now after the incredibly horrific Orlando attack and killing of 49 people, 53 were wounded? What happens? Does a war on terrorism accelerate or what?
Well, I think behind the scenes, the Obama administration has been steadily accelerating the war on terrorism. But this, of course, Fred, was a what is often called a homegrown terrorism. This was just like in not so long ago shootings in San Bernardino, California. The perpetrator here was a United States citizen, not some radical sent in from Syria to spew hate. And so it's hard to know. I mean, the political context, of course, is the same. The Democrats immediately, and President Obama immediately said, we have to do something to allow what the White House is calling weapons of war, meaning a very sophisticated semi-automatic rifle.
Yeah, well, we'll get back to that
from
in a
being,
minute.
Yes, from being used in terrorism attacks. We've got to make it harder for people who want to do that to get these kind of weapons. The Republicans go back to their corner, or their respective corners, and say it's not the guns, it's the people and the motivation. There will be an effort to try to toughen gun control laws, but in the past, those don't go anywhere. I've said many times, I think probably beyond dispute, that the two most powerful political lobbies in this country are the Israeli lobby and the National Rifle Association, both very powerful and both very well-organized, well-financed. And so you don't want to believe as a culture and as a society that after 2 weeks we'll all just stop worrying about these sorts of slaughters.
Even though that's happened before?
It has happened before, and some will say, well, this is the worst. And more people died in Orlando than in any other terrorist event in this country ever. And
well, since 9/11.
For sure, that's right, not counting 9/11. And so we will just have to, we'll have to see. I think both political parties will use this, attempt to use this as a way to score political points.
Yeah, Barbara, how do you see the situation?
Well, I agree with Tom's analysis. The perpetrator in this case was born in Queens, New York, not far from where Donald Trump was born. He clearly had a lot of mental problems. He was repeatedly suspended from school, thrown out of school. His allegiance to so-called Islamic State was only announced just before or during the commission of this horrific act, and there the FBI says there's absolutely no evidence that he had any kind of direct connection with the group. He apparently abused his first wife. I mean,
well, wait a minute,
in many ways, he was similar to Dylann Roof, who killed all those folks in the congregation in Charleston, or the fellow who killed those children in Sandy Hook. The only difference is that he picked the Islamic State as something to wrap his crime around.
Well, I know, but we know that he had been commenting to co-workers and friends about how he had been saying favorable things about terrorism and identifying with Islamic radicals, and he posted things on his Facebook, he called into 9/11 and to radio stations during this whole attack. I mean, he did it in the name of Islamic State, didn't he?
Well, he said he did it in the name of the Islamic State. But what about the I wrote a piece for VOA comparing this to Anders Breivik, the Norwegian, who was a virulent Christian supremacist, neo-Nazi, virulently anti-immigration, who murdered children on a resort island a few years back in the name of his ideology. So what I'm trying to say is that there are ideologies that unstable people use to justify hideous crimes against humanity. And I think rather than, obviously we have to look at the Islamic State and the way in which it's used and the way in which it may inspire people to commit acts, but the fault lies with the individual who commits the crime more than with a whole religion. And I think I agree with President Obama that talking about radical Islam is not necessarily helpful in this case.
We'll get back to that in a minute. But he had been investigated by the FBI
twice. They found nothing.
Well, they found he denied these things, which he apparently.
Said, we have a First Amendment. Yeah. He said horrific things.
I'm very sympathetic.
You're allowed to say horrific things, as we've seen in our presidential campaign, as long as you don't commit acts of violence.
I agree with that.
Cleared.
I'm sympathetic to the FBI.
He was cleared.
I don't know about cleared, but they didn't see that there was any reason. They dropped him from,
they dropped him from the list.
Tom?
Well, it's hard to believe that somebody like this, who had attracted government attention, as Barbara had said, was interviewed by the FBI at least twice, was able legally to get this high-powered weapon. And until that changes, and I'm pessimistic that that will change, these sorts of things will still happen.
What would have happened if he'd still been on the list and was buying this weaponry? Would the FBI have been called or something?
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily. As a matter of fact, there's a gun store owner who says he called the FBI and said, we've got a guy acting a little crazy here. He wants body armor. And the FBI and the state of Florida are both saying there's no record of any such call made from the gun store. So it's murky, that's for sure.
Well, what about gun control? We've had these debates before after some of these mass shootings. I don't think there's much optimism that anything is going to change. And I believe the bills that they're seeking would not have had any impact on stopping this killer. The gun he had, it wasn't an assault weapon. It wasn't
an
AR-15.
It was an assault-style weapon, though.
Well, that's not an assault weapon. It wasn't an automatic weapon. You had to pull the trigger. And, I mean, it was a horrific case. But why jump to a gun control argument when here you had this horrible case of terrorism?
Because it might stop future such crimes and because you have to do something when things like this happen. And the Republican Party's refusal to do anything is shocking.
I can't think of one of these mass killings that this gun control legislation would have stopped.
Well, we haven't had it, so we don't know, do we?
Well, we do know what's happened before and whether this would have had any effect on him or not, and it wouldn't have.
That's why the NRA does not want any legislation that reduces the sale of guns in this country. Full stop.
Of course. I'll go back. Why? I was started getting emails Sunday morning, and this attack was between 2 a.m. and 5 a.m. on Sunday morning. I was getting emails, mainly from Democrats, talking about we have to have gun control immediately. Why change the subject to that so immediately?
It's not changing the subject.
Well, isn't that politicizing the attack?
Yes, of course. The Democrats do it. The Republicans do it. I do want to say I would want to do a little research, but I believe that when for a few years there was a ban on the sale of assault weapons, assault-style weapons, I believe the number of mass shootings, double-digit shootings, double-digit murders went down. Now, that bill was fiercely opposed by the National Rifle Association, and when it needed to be renewed, I believe in the Clinton administration, it was not renewed. But I think there was a period of several years where that helped the problem. But, I mean, as long as America is in many ways the last frontier. I mean, guns are a big deal in parts of this country, especially the West, and especially among people who believe that the Second Amendment gives every American the right to bear arms is the phrase in the Constitution, and a lot of people feel like that is or should be an absolute value.
What about this question that the president brought up, and he's obviously been criticized for months and months and months for not using the phrase radical Islam. And he defended himself very strongly.
He called it a political talking point, not a strategy.
Yeah.
You know, I think Because anyone who knows anything about counterterrorism knows that last thing you want to do is alienate those whose cooperation you need to really fight and expunge this horrible disease from, you know, the Muslim faith. So if you call it radical Islam, the suggestion is that there is, you know, something wrong with the religion itself, with 1.6 billion Muslims, whereas if you call it what Hillary Clinton did, she called it radical Islamism. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a good way of sort of, you know, slicing the baby, if you will, because Islamism means it's not really the faith. It's a variant of it, a twisted variant of it that some people are using to justify these crimes. But, you know, Obama lived in Indonesia. He lived in a Muslim-majority country as a child. I think he's very, very sensitive to anything that suggests ethnic or religious or racial prejudice.
Here's what I don't understand, Tom, and that is, why wouldn't a peaceful Muslim want to be distinguished from radical Islamists?
Well,
which that would do. If you call this radical Islam, and then
well,
you have...
they would argue that it's not Islam at all, that Islam is not a nation that advocates slaughtering innocents.
I know. So you would like to distinguish between the two, between this radical Islam and the Islam that the most
Muslims... Why not just call them terrorists?
Well, you call them that too.
That's what they are.
This is why so many American Muslims are offended at kind of the what they believe is an ad hominem attack by Donald Trump, who wants to ban all Muslims entering the country, at least for a while. Barbara is right. The only way, one of the ways you get at this horrible variant, twisted variant, to use Barbara's phrase, of Islam is to encourage Islamic leaders and ordinary Islamic Americans to be more vigilant, right, and to turn these people in. There's now evidence emerging that this shooter, a lot of his neighbors, people who attended services with him, thought he was crazy and were very nervous about it. But a lot of people are reluctant to get involved.
Mm-hmm. What about the FBI? As I said before, I'm sympathetic to the FBI. They investigated this guy and didn't find the evidence that should have put him on this terrorist list or potential terrorist list. Mm-hmm. What can the FBI do? I mean, they're in a very difficult situation.
Well, you know, they have limited resources. They're obviously trying to monitor what they think are active plots that involve perhaps more than one person. This is one individual. Very, very, very hard to figure out when one individual is going to snap if he doesn't have any contact with individuals outside, you know, that can be monitored. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sympathetic to them. I think it really is the responsibility of the community. This individual apparently, you know, his current wife, apparently went with him to case the nightclub where this atrocity took place.
And to buy ammunition.
And, you know, her responsibility to turn him in, to my mind, seems the greatest, actually.
I think she's in trouble.
Yeah, well, we will see.
We'll have more in just a minute. First, a reminder that you're listening to Issues in the News, coming to you on the Voice of America in Washington. I'm your moderator, Fred Barnes, of the Weekly Standard. Joining me on the show are Tom DeFrank of National Journal and Barbara Slavin of Al Monitor. And this is a reminder that you can listen to Issues online as a podcast. The program is also available for free download on iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/archive/issues-in-the-news. That's Issues in the News with hyphens between, you know, like issues and in. Anyway, you can't escape Issues in the News. It is all over the place. Let me read you something that the Washington Post wrote. Barbara will be upset by this, but I'm going to read it anyway.
That's okay.
Quote, both Clinton and Obama were eager to shift the focus away from terrorism and the battle against Islamic State, an area of relative weakness for Democrats. Tom?
It is ironic because President Obama has done more drone strikes,
indeed,
killed more leaders, terrorist leaders, including, of course, Osama bin Laden, than President George W. Bush or any of his predecessors. But having said that, he is constantly on the defensive from Republicans for not doing enough. And the Republicans continue to believe that this is an opportunity for Republicans to continue to discredit President Obama and, by extension, Hillary Clinton.
In this case, I think they both believe they're correct, however.
Well, there's a case to be made about, you know, Obama allowing troops to be withdrawn from Iraq and not responding robustly enough in Syria, and that this facilitated the growth of the Islamic State. I think that's a reasonable argument. I mean, you can also go back and say George W. Bush shouldn't have invaded Iraq to begin with, and then we never would have faced this phenomenon at all. So this is going to be argued back and forth, I'm sure, during the campaign. What is beyond the pale are some of the things Donald Trump had to say in the aftermath of the Orlando shootings, suggesting that the President of the United States was complicit in the attacks, was so far beyond the pale.
That vague statement that I didn't interpret that way at all.
Something going on, he said. Come on, Fred.
There's something going on. Why does that say that he's accusing the president of being complicit or at least friendly to terrorists?
It's exactly the interpretation that he wanted his loyal followers to hear.
How do we know this?
And it was shocking because it was really obvious in the way it was expressed. Come on.
Well, I think Donald Trump is a very smart man, and he pops off a lot, but oftentimes he knows exactly what he's doing. And I think that he believes that this line of attack against President Obama and the Democrats, including Hillary Clinton, is good for him politically.
But my question is, I mean, do you interpret that as Donald Trump subtly trying to say that Obama really agrees with the terrorists?
Didn't he say at one point in recent days that Obama gives priority to our enemies?
Yes, he said he's with our enemies and not with our... He said he's with our enemies. So, he defends our enemies. Come
little,
on, Fred. I mean, how more explicit
to,
can you...
Little hard to
I didn't
parse.
Think that was explicit at all, that the phrase that you cited. Anyway, we're going to turn to, unless there's more you want to say, Barbara or Tom.
I wouldn't mind saying more about this issue, because I think that the depths of bigotry and hatred and racism to which the Republican presumptive nominee has sunk are unprecedented in my lifetime.
Tom?
Well,
we're referring to Donald Trump here,
the presumptive Republican
nominee.
As I said, he usually knows what he's doing, whether it makes sense or not. I've always thought that some of Mr. Trump's rhetoric works very well for primary audiences, but it's going to cause him a larger problem potentially in the fall, unless a lot of us, including reporters, have misread the mood of the country. We will we'll see, and we have 5 months to that question will be answered within 5 months.
You know, Trump trails Hillary Clinton in polls, some of them by double digits. I've sort of followed the polls after this Orlando shooting, and I haven't seen any movement toward Trump since then.
I think his numbers have gotten worse as a result of this. So you keep hearing that there are Republicans desperately trying to figure out a way to deny him the nomination at the Cleveland Convention. I think that's next to impossible. Yeah. I think that's wishful thinking in the extreme. But the fact that more and more Republican leaders are very nervous about him leading their party into November, that is unquestionably true.
Can we turn to the United Kingdom now?
Sure.
This show's very democratic. People can extend issues if they want to. Anyway, they're going to have this vote in the United Kingdom, which everybody thought, you know, I've talked to a bunch of Brits who want Britain, the United Kingdom, to pull out of the European Union, but just didn't think the vote was going to go that way. The Leave people would fail. But now polls, Barbara, have shown, there have been three or four of them, that shown that England may indeed vote to leave the European Union.
Yeah. Well, of course, we've had another terrible incident of violence that may actually affect that, and that is the murder of a Labour Party member of Parliament, Joe Cox, by a gentleman who affiliated himself with something called Britain First. And also apparently had links to an American neo-Nazi group called the National Alliance, and they've suspended the campaigning in the aftermath of her death. And she was a strong advocate of remaining within the European Union, so it'll be interesting to see whether this killing, which is quite shocking in a British context, very unusual to have this kind of violence, political violence in Britain, whether this will affect it. But, you know, you're right, the polls up until now have shown a trend toward leaving. And, you know, I think it's a very, very difficult decision for people in Britain to make, because there are economic arguments to be made for staying in the union, but there are also arguments to be made for leaving. There has been a huge influx of people from other EU countries into Britain, and they've taken the sort of working class jobs that are now not going to British citizens. And there is an enormous resentment of that, you know, that you can go into a coffee shop in London and everyone there is Polish and Romanian and Greek and Portuguese. And where are the English, right? Where are the Brits?
I've experienced that in London, where
many people have.
All the waiters were Polish.
Many people have. Of course, if you're an employer, mm-hmm. in Britain, you'll say it's great that you have this large pool of young people from mm-hmm. all over, you know, Europe that want mm-hmm. to come and want to work and will work hard, perhaps work harder than the natives. Have
Indeed.
We heard this before? So I think this is the kind of mm-hmm. battle that's being set mm-hmm. up there.
I think Americans find it hard to believe that England would allow itself, or any country would allow itself, to have some international or European organization make decisions for them. Mm-hmm. They're not the ultimate decisions, but I mean, the EU does have some power over the individual countries.
Right, and that's why nationalist forces in England, in the UK, have been able to use that argument effectively. I guess my sense of this is, it reminds me of the movement two or three years ago where Scotland wanted to become independent, mm-hmm. and it was a very close-run thing, as mm-hmm. the Duke of Wellington once said, about Waterloo. And in the end, the Scottish voters mm-hmm. decided to stay within the United Kingdom. Mm-hmm. And I think the conventional wisdom is that UK will narrowly decide to stay, but that is the conventional wisdom. And if mm-hmm. we've learned anything mm-hmm. this year, it's the mm-hmm. conventional wisdom is often wrong. And if, in fact, the vote is to get out of the EU, it will yet be another example of not just great rage in the United States about disgust with the system not working. That same phenomenon may well be in the British Isles as well. We'll have to see. I think it's going to be very close, and it really could go either way.
You know, I agree with you. I just can't imagine that the Leave people will win, but who knows? But if it happens, it would be a huge repercussion politically and economically and so on in the United Kingdom, don't you think, Barbara?
Very much so, and the government could fall. You know, we really can't predict all the ramifications mm-hmm. for the economy. I think it's fair to say that everybody's stock markets would drop rather precipitously while they try to get adjusted to the new reality. And the EU's not in good shape. I mean, mm-hmm. it's been through a number of crises. And it really could crack mm-hmm. the whole structure.
Well, Britain's never been in the currency. They've never adopted the euro. We still have the pound. But this is a huge vote. And you're right. I mean, we're going to probably if England pulls out, probably have a new prime minister. I suspect you'll have to have an election sometime sooner than expected. And you know, President Obama went there and
made an appeal. Yeah.
And made an appeal. I don't know whether that helped. I don't think it hurt.
Obama had to walk a real tightrope. He mm-hmm. He basically said, this is up to the people of the United Kingdom to decide, but a strong Britain is our ally, and Britain and the United States have worked well within the mm-hmm. European community. He was basically saying, mm-hmm. don't do this, it's nuts, but he was having to be very careful. We'll see. So if the English pull out, it will be ramifications for the president as well. But Barbara is right, I think. Maybe it's time for nervous voters nearing retirement in this country to be a little more defensive in their retirement accounts.
Well, stocks have already been falling sort of in anticipation.
So the opposite, of course, is also true. If they stay in, I imagine that the stock markets will rise. So we will see. You heard it here.
I'm not... well, maybe people will be voting their stocks. Unfortunately, as Americans, we don't have a vote. Anyway, that's all the time we have. Joining us today were Barbara Slavin, Acting Director of the Future of Iran Initiative at the Atlantic Council and Washington correspondent for Al Monitor, and Tom DeFrank, Contributing Editor at National Journal. This program was produced by Anya Zalewski. Our engineers were Wagner Roberts and Linus Rimkus. I'm Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard. Thank you for listening.